Good day, everybody. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. It's episode 230. We are just coming back from a two-week hiatus, our first two-week hiatus ever on the Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures website or podcast.
Podcast, website, everything.
Yeah. So we literally, for the first time ever, stepped away for 2 weeks. We were both sort of on vacation. Poor Robert's nodding his head.
No, I'm actually, no, I was flipping the numbers. We're over 4 years at this event.
Yes.
So in 4 years, it's the first time we missed two episodes.
First time we missed one episode.
Yeah, first time we ever missed an episode, actually. I mean, we gave notice, and it was good reason. After more than 4 years, March, I guess, will be fifth year. That's craziness.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, so we've been away for a while. I guess there's been a few things that have happened. I think both of us got out for at least some kind of bushcrafting type outdoor adventure stuff over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I did make it out for a little bit. Like I said, before you and I were talking on the before the podcast here, my plans changed a little bit. Did get out on some adventures, and I certainly hope you did as well, sir.
I did. I definitely did. I got out to Kedgy. We were really lucky. We managed to snag a couple of nights in Kedgy last minute. Went back to, I think, sites 24 and 26. Did some portaging. It called for thunder showers, I think was probably why we ended up with the site. I'm not sure about that, but turned out that it was a mist at most. So, I had good weather.
That's nothing. Yeah, mist is just enough to let you know you're alive then. We've said that before.
Yeah, I've been much wetter.
Myself, I managed to get out with Melissa to Wallace River, and we did stay at the domes there, as well as we did some ATV and a bushcrafting while we were out there. And we did have a quick trip to PEI, though that wasn't as long or as adventurous as I originally hoped. We did make it over there for a little tour, unrelated to Atlantic Bushcraft. I did make it over to a company that I've been meaning to stop into for a little while. They support one of my fundraisers I do, and that was kind of my highlight of that trip, as well as seeing some family that I hadn't seen in a little while. And yeah, so PEI was bushcrafty. Wallace River, the most bushcrafty.
Yeah. Awesome. Out of curiosity, did you get anything new for bushcrafting in the last few weeks?
I have not gotten anything new, but on my personal Facebook account, if anybody has it on there, and I know some of the folks listening to this right now have my access, I will switch it over. I do have some drone footage of some of the stuff that we were doing while we were out and adventuring around Wallace River, and I'm hoping to cross that over to Atlantic Bushcraft once I, of course, put some audio and stuff in it, because I just uploaded the raw footage to my personal account. But that's the most bushcrafty new thing since you and I last talked, Ben.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. I did get a few tiny things. I know some of our listeners have recommended the Olight flashlight series.
Yep.
It's been brought up quite a few times. I did order one while I was in Nova Scotia and had it delivered directly to my cabin. That was an interesting experience. So I got to play with one of those.
Which kind of did you, if you don't mind me asking, bro?
I got the, I think it's the pre-run 2.
Okay, yeah.
Most likely not far. All my crap is not far. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of a neat thing.
So hackers, once again, anybody listening to us out there in Cyberville, there is a little echo on my side. I apologize to that. That is just where I am. I'm sitting with my in-laws here, and it does echo a little bit. So I apologize. That is not an IT issue. That is a Robert issue. That'll be cured up eventually. Anyway, so how do you like the headlamp? Well, not just headlamp. I mean, whole light flashlight. They're pretty bright, ain't they, man?
It is pretty bright. It's a nice little system. Basically, I lost my other good one. I had a different one, a different brand. It was actually pretty good. There was a few things about it I didn't like. The other one I had an optical sensor, so if you flashed your hand in front of it, it would turn itself on and off. That seems like a really good idea until you're walking through the woods and every leaf does the exact same thing.
I never thought of that, to be honest with you. I have never even once thought about that, but you would literally be a walking seizure.
So that was a bit annoying. Anyway, I had gone back to backwoods here in BC to a spot. I'm not going to pronounce it. But anyways, it doesn't matter. Went back to some backwoods camping sites back there. And when I got back, I couldn't find my headlamp. So I don't know where I lost it to. If it's still back there on a tree, I don't know. I looked it up. It was about $30 to replace. But I decided not to. I decided to get something a little bit more high quality, I guess. So it's my first Olight. Yeah.
So I'm going to be honest. I got five Olights. But only one is really like an actual flashlight. The other four are just the keychain ones. Every now and then Olight will put on, you know, like free keychain with new account sign up. All you gotta do is pay shipping. Well, rip all my friends and be like, yeah, make an account and I'll pay the shipping. Just give me the flashlight. Which I'm not endorsing anyone do that. It's kind of technically maybe borderline fraud. Anyway, long story short, I did eventually end up, like, don't get me wrong, I have one, Mel has one, Willie has one. So there's the three accounts, and I bugged one friend from work. And anyway, I did end up with them.
And this is how Robert ended up in prison. No.
yeah, I mean. But the one Olight I have, I think it's the SR2. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's purple. I think I've sheltered on the podcast in the past. Unfortunately, Tom's not here with me. But probably like your headlamp. It only has one button on it, but that button has multiple functions.
Yeah.
Okay, so you need to be basically a, like, really read the book for that, because I didn't with mine until the second year I owned it, and it does way more than I thought it did.
Yeah, I think this one has like a proximity sensor, but the way it works is as you get closer to some things, it'll actually dim. So if you're reading a map and you pull it up close, it'll actually dim a little bit. I haven't noticed it too much, and maybe that means it's working well. Like, I don't notice it getting brighter or dim. Dollar, it just sort of stays consistent. But it's the headpiece is a nice rubberized thing, and a flashlight comes out and it has a little clip you can hook it onto, like a hat or your belt or your pocket, pretty well anywhere you want. And you can hold it as a flashlight. It's pretty adjustable up and down because it can rotate in those rings. I just noticed how reflective the headband is. So overall, you know, does a good job. I can't complain.
I was going to say, with Olight, in no way are we sponsored by Olight, but if you guys are listening and you're interested, we're your guys, and I shall say, shameless plug. Anyway, with Olight equipment, it is a little more cost to it than you would like your big box card flashlights and stuff like that. But you do get what you paid for with this. I do find the build quality is very good. They do usually say they're shockproof, waterproof, things like that, or at least the one I did was. And I literally threw mine in a jug of water, you know what I mean? Like, I got it on a discount through them, and I was testing it. And I put mine through the paces, and man, it held up, still works great. I think I've only charged it twice in the 2 years I've owned it, so they hold a good charge. And like I said, you get a quality piece of equipment with a light.
Well, it's, you know, there's a few pieces of gear that for years we kind of had a policy. We don't buy, this is our family motto for things. We rarely buy the most expensive, but we never really try to buy the most cheap. We go for pretty solid middle of the line. Olight, in my world, and somebody might say, oh, there's much more expensive, and I'm sure there is. are on the more expensive end of what I wanted to spend. I was looking at True Night. They had a very similar light, and it was 30, 40 bucks cheaper, I think. But then I looked at it and it had a lower powered battery and a top. Lumels weren't quite the same. And honestly, like, we had a friend that was with us when I got it, and she looked at it and she said, well, I mean, you could go to Dollar Store and pay 15, 10 bucks and get something that does pretty well everything this does. And you know what? In one way, you could. But when you put this thing on turbo mode, no, you can't. You know?
And that's the thing. You do get kind of what you pay for. The other thing is the build quality. Yeah, you can buy one for 15, 20, 30 bucks. Go throw it in a 4-liter jug of water and come back in 2 days and see what happens. I've done that with my old light. Still work. I've also, like, thrown mine as hard as I could up into the air and I'm going to fall on the pavement. It's got a big dent in it, but it still works. I mean, there is a little bit of build quality there. But yeah, you don't necessarily have to buy the most top-end stuff. Absolutely not. But with O-lights, a little extra money, you actually get a pretty good product. I was very thoroughly impressed with my product anyway. I sincerely hope that you get the same experience as yours.
I'm looking forward to it. There's a few other odds and ends I ended up picking up the last little while. This wasn't necessarily for camping, but just something that sort of the same idea. I was on the mech site the other day, and I had been given a backpack as part of an event I went to. Nothing to do with ABA, but just through work. And I was driving home one day, and the backpack opened up. And I was like, oh, darn, I mustn't have zipped it right. Anyways, fortunately, nothing important got lost. So I was like, that's cool. But I drove down the next day and the same thing happened. So then I realized, like, something was gone wrong with the zipper and it wasn't holding. Now, I've since fixed it, but I don't trust it anymore. I don't trust it with my work laptop, with various other gear and stuff that I put in it. So I said, nah, I'm getting something new. So I went looking and I was sizing them up, and I seen that there was a good sale at Mech. So I went down to Mech and I picked up a backpack, and you can use it for backwoods backcamping. I did the other weekend, but it was just a solid good backpack, and it was neat because it has a small pack and a big pack, and I think I'll do a review of it later. But it's a really good travel pack. It's more a travel pack than backwoods pack, but it's very smooth. There's little to catch on things. I think it's 40 liters plus a 20 liter bag that can strap to the front or the back.
So I think you and I talked about this, not on ABA, but on our own.
Yeah. So it's a neat thing. Yeah. So, you know, quality gear, again.
Now, quality gear does go a little bit away. And I'm much like you, and I think a lot of our listeners and viewers, they're in the same boat. Probably none of us, at least listening to you and I, maybe we're wrong, but in our little group, I would assume, we don't have perhaps the luxury of being able to go out and throw any kind of a price tag on any piece of gear we want. We're generally pretty
frugal.
I don't want to say frugal. I want to say concerned about where we spend our money. Because we don't want to get one kick at the can, or putting a whole bunch of money on this one piece of gear means you're not going to get those other three pieces of gear that you're potentially looking at too, or more to the point, you may be looking at four separate pieces of gear and you're only able to get one. So you really got to do your, well, at least with you and I know, we really do our research and figure out where we want to put that money, because that may be the only, you know, quote unquote present we get ourselves for the next X amount of time, which could be months, might be a year, like, you know what I mean, depending on what we just purchased.
Well, and I've been thinking a lot about this. This is sort of, when you buy gear, you have to think about how you're going to use it. And are you going to use it? Is the value there for it? Like, you know, went camping the other weekend and we picked up $7 tarp, a blue poly tarp, you know, the one I'm talking about, the disposable tarps, as I like to refer them to, because we knew it was potentially going to rain. We wanted something to protect, you know, to pull over the picnic table, put close to the fire. And it bothered me because I'm used to using like still nylon tarps now, or at least good you know, polyester style, like quality bushcrafting tarps, you know, good tie outs, not these crimp on rings with the cheap plastics. But, you know, it works. It folded up decently well. We were able to take it. It didn't weigh all that much. Honestly, like, it's hard to beat one of those, you know, Walmart Canadian Tire tarps. Like, you know what the one I'm talking about, right?
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I carry one in my truck specifically as a disposable tarp, as you put it. It's my sacrificial tarp. It can get used for anything.
Yeah.
But they're amazing things to have as long as you treat them like that. If you try and save them, you'll drive yourself nuts.
Like, we bought one a few weeks ago for a different purpose. It was just the ground sheet for our tent. Now, we didn't buy the most expensive tent. We bought a truck style, a car type camp tent, big 2-room thing that the whole family could get in, because we were going to go out for 2 or 3 days and we really wanted to, you know, we had a big site booked and we just wanted to be able to be in there and comfortable and not tripping over each other. We didn't know what the weather would be like, so we had this thing. And just to protect the bottom, throw a tarp underneath it. You know, would I like to have a thick canvas tarp that's going to protect it way more? 100%. Do I want to drag around a $200 canvas tarp?
If it's absolutely a canvas tarp, it might also be 200 pounds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's 10 by 16. No, it's not close to it.
Yeah, no, but it's still be another 10, 15 pound tarp for sure.
Yeah, 10 by 12. It's a big tarp. It's a lot of room. You know, those things don't fold up very well.
Nope, you unfold them once they're done. Like, you can get them back small, but never as small as they came in the package, that's for sure.
Well, I was talking about the canvas ones. Those are friggin'.
Yeah, any tarp. The only ones would be those, like, seal nylon that you're talking about. Like, those actually can pack down pretty small again. You can get, they usually come with, like, a stuff sack system, much like the one that I scabbed off you that time. It's it'll go back into its own kind of little container, but I mean, any other tarp, man, you might as well open it up, do what you're gonna do, fold it up, and that's its new size. That's basically as small as you're ever gonna get that again, and just make some sort of a holding system for it that size. Because if you buy one and make a holding system for it while it's still new, you're gonna be horribly disappointed the next time you go and try and use it.
But only 70% of it ever fits back in that bag ever again.
Pretty much. And you're lucky at 70%. I've seen less than that.
Yeah. I was in, not bushcraft related, but I'm close to a Mex, and every now and then I go down and visit. And the girls need a new backpack, so we went down, and I noticed they have really nice little stuff sacks made of steel nylon. They have a roll cup top type, and they have a cinch top, and the roll top type are bigger per volume than the non-roll top ones by far.
Sorry, I'm just getting a text from my wife as well. As most of you folks out there, and Ben and I have been talking about, I'm not at home. I'm traveling. I don't want to say abroad. I'm just traveling throughout the province, but I'm not at home. So I get little updates. Sorry about that, folks. I lost my train of thought there for a second, Ben. What were we talking about?
Well, I just said I was at Mech and they had these little stuff sacks, either cinch top or roll top. And the cinch top ones were cheap, so I picked up a handful of them. They were on sale. They weren't cheap. They threw in one of the roll top ones, and I sized them up. But, man, those are so small and light. I picked up, I think, some 5s, some 10s, and some 20s. So, liters. And I'm going to use them because a lot of my packs that I'm starting to lean towards are the ones with not all that many pockets anymore. Just, you know, and I want something to put my clothes, my clean clothes, my dirty clothes, my food, and keep them separate. Certain things don't need to ever touch.
No, completely agree. We've talked about this in past episodes. How you section off a backpack. And both you and I are on the, instead of having a backpack with a ton of pockets, I prefer a backpack with a couple pockets. I can separate some stuff there. But then inside the main pocket, I like to pack everything individually, much like yourself. We've learned this about each other. And it's just a better method. And getting stuff sacks like that is definitely the way to go, because then you not only can keep it separated and compartmentalized, you keep it dry. You know what I mean? Then you don't have to worry about like a backpack cover and stuff like that. Not that I ever used the one I have. I do have a backpack cover, and I still think it's sitting in the package it came in. But yeah, no, great find there. I'm trying to think. I had something I wanted to say. So yeah, a little bit about the vacation tour, just I guess to touch on that a little bit in case anybody out there is wondering, because we did disappear for 2 weeks, and I assume most folks are wondering what we're doing, because all of a sudden we were going on vacation. We kind of gave you the idea. Ben went out to Kedgett, much like he said there, and he was back in Nova Scotia this neck of the woods. We were supposed to meet up. That didn't happen. It worked out that way. Completely unfortunate. So now I got to fly over there.
Yeah.
No, you had your fun. You came this way. Now the deal is I gotta go back. I know where I'm at. But anyway, yeah, we got out. Melissa and I went to a little trip out to a place called Wallace River Domes. I did a little work for them. We stayed a couple of nights there. We took a big tour on the ATV. We covered a couple hundred kilometers, hit all the old trails and stuff back there. Got to see some beautiful scenery. We took our camps, boats, things like that. We did some day adventures, with some stuff. One of the things I did while I was down that way that I was kind of humorously disappointed with, we stopped in at these little towns. Like, what are we, the ATV trails? A lot alongside towns down in this area. If you wouldn't know from, you probably know what I'm talking about. And you can literally come off the ATV trail on your ATV and pull in the parking lots. So as we were going by, I found this outdoors adventure store. You know what I mean? And I'm like, holy crap, we got to stop there. So off we whip, and I'm walking out, and I'm like, okay, it's like outdoor adventure gear sold here. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. Now let's go in. You know what they had?
What?
Bicycles and scooters.
That's disappointing.
So I'm not going to name the company, because I'm not that mean. And I hold no begrudging hatred to them. Don't misunderstand. It was just one of those humorously disappointing things, because literally as I was pulling over on the ATV going, Mel, let's get the camera out. We can do some stuff here. You know what I mean? So we got the phone over. I even shot a quick video into this thing, and it just ended up being nothing.
Pure disappointment.
Well, yeah, and I didn't really want to post that because they would have seen the store name and all that stuff. Like I said, it was a good store. They were good natured. We went in and talked to them. Great people, super friendly. It's just a very high tourism area, and they kind of catered to people that don't normally do outdoorsy stuff. So they hit the big ticket items. You could rent like electric pedal bikes and go touring down this ATV trail that we were on. You could get scooters and go touring through the town. You could, I think they rented kayaks and potentially canoes to some of the lakes and stuff that were there. And I may go back and look at some of that stuff. But when I seen outdoor adventure supplies sold here, I was expecting much like, you know, some camping gear, bare minimum. You know what I mean? Like a couple of Coke stoves, maybe some backpacks, even a hat.
Even a hat, just a hat. No, it's, you know, it's actually a really good point, because what we think of as outdoors venture, not what everyone else does sometimes. And
that's the thing. It was just, you know, it was more marketed towards tourism and people coming through, and I get that and I respect that. It's fine. It was just a funny little story. So a couple comments here. Danny, Red Sand Adventures, joined us, says, tell me that at least one of the bikes or scooters are painted in camo wheels. Yes, one was, because it was one of the electric bicycles. You could rent them there or you could buy them there. And the cost of it damn near staggered me. I'm not going to lie. I think it was like $3,900 for this electric bicycle. And I'm like, holy goodness, I never actually realized how much these things cost. A lot of cool features on it. Don't misunderstand. Maybe that's a great price. I don't know. But for $4,000, I'm like, I can buy a car. You know what I mean?
I thought you were going to go to the same place I did, because I came up here to BC. And one of my ideas was, I will get an electric bicycle. I said, that would be a great thing. I'll get one of those, you know, paddleless bicycles that with the electric assist. I was looking at a few brands. I think all the brands I looked at were actually pretty good. Ego was one. I think Rad Rover was another, and they all sell for $2,000+. And the immediate thought went through my head when I'm looking at each one of them is, I could buy a motorcycle for this.
Yeah, same thing. You know what I mean? So Mel's just chiming in here. Didn't realize she was in the comments with us, but she said, and the place was like wide open, empty. I kind of left that out. She's 100% right. Like, you walk in, this thing's just like a big, empty room. Just rows of bikes, scooters, e-bikes, and kayaks. Like, not even any accessories. Very specific outdoor gear sold here. Kind of did. Like, it was just, it was humorous. You have to laugh in situations like that. And if by gear you mean bicycles, which is, that's kind of it. You know what I mean? Once again, outdoor gear to me, I was expecting, as I said, at least a hat, maybe some backpacks, you know, the normal outdoorsy stuff you see. Even the dollar store has some of the stuff like matches, the odd camp cup, the egg holder that you see everywhere that everybody sells it, nobody buys it. They buy it, use it once in real life, but they don't need it. Like, that kind of stuff. There was none. Absolutely none. But no, it was a good.
I'm totally confused.
And as for what did you say, Nomad? There, I can't stand that when you go to a sporting goods store in your area, and when you get there, it's golf clubs. That's exactly how this kind of felt. You know what I mean? It's the old bait and switch. And the funny thing was, when Mel and I were there, it was like it almost looked like a two-story building. So we went downstairs because that's kind of where the arrows were pointed, and this is where all the rental stuff was. We're like, oh, okay, well, maybe the gear is for sale upstairs. Yeah, no, no. Not at all. It was just more disappointment. That's something else entirely. But still fun time. Don't get me wrong. Where you are in the comments there, no, we didn't buy any bushcrafting gear that I can think of while we were out. We did buy a whole bunch of knickknacks and stuff like that, but most of it was for Lily, completely honestly. Yeah, no, that was my funny story from there, but we did get a lot of nice trails out there. We got some great footage with the drone. Like I said, I'll try and get some of that stuff up there. You folks have my personal account. I don't mention some of it's up there. We have some pictures. I'll try and get some of that stuff up on here in the next little while. I don't know if Ben mentioned it or not. We both came in a little hot. Like, Monday was our first day back at our respective areas. Basically, we both jumped straight into work. So there hasn't been a lot of time to really catch up. The phone still sits at home on a ton of footage and photos on, and I haven't even gotten around to start editing it. So what did Mel say? Upstairs equals gift shop with $20 soaps and $100 scarves. Yes, that's what it was. There wasn't a lot. But what else did we do while we were down there, Mel? We did see some neat things. We got to see... some of the ATV trails run over some of the bigger rivers down there, and you probably know what we're going to talk about a lot there, Ben. There's some tidal rivers down in that area, and there's some really neat suspension bridges that go over them. You can clearly see where the tide goes up and down, like, probably 16 feet.
Yeah.
Like, real big tide changes in there. That was kind of neat. It'd be a lot of fun to get down there in a boat. I don't know. You know the area I'm talking about. Is that somewhere you've ever really been traveling on?
I've done the tidal bore rafting.
What do you think of that?
That is an adventure and a half. I would love to do it again. We did it in October and a full moon. And we had an absolute blast. That was the highest tides of the year, I think they told us. The water was warmer than we expected. They gave us Mustang suits to wear for the trip. So you show up this big building, you get onto these like rigid hull inflatables. They drive you up to the mouth of Fundy. You put them out on a mud flat. You're walking around playing, doing your thing. And then they say, oh, time to get in. And you can watch the boar coming at you.
And this is what I've heard. Like, you can literally just watch the wall of water come towards you.
So you run and you jump aboard your boat, and then they go back. And what they do is they ride the boar. Essentially, they surf it down the river. And so coming up, they drive very conservatively because they're trying to save the fuel for the return trip. And coming back, like, they'll pass the boar, and then they'll shoot back up through it, and they'll go back down through it, and they'll just keep, like, playing on the boar, basically, all the way back to the camp. And at one point, I know I look back, the whole boat was underwater. Like, he just submarined through the bore. And the gas can was literally floating out of the boat because there was more water than... If it wasn't inflatable sides, it would have sunk. You know what I mean? Like, and we all washed out of it at least once. But it was... an adventure. It was really interesting. You're trying to hold yourself into the boat with the rope from behind you.
Oh gosh, that would be a little tricky. Wouldn't you just fall backward? We're gonna deal with
it. Yeah, you would, right? So yeah, imagine exactly. The boat goes underwater. You're wearing a Mustang suit that's floatable, and so are you. So now you're like above the boat. When the boat comes back up out of the water, if you're on the inside of the boat, you're good. But if you're on the outside of the boat, you're just gone. You hold on to the rope.
If I just wanted to do it, I'm worried I would get seasick. In smaller boats, I'm generally pretty good, but that is a lot of rough water. You know what I mean? So they don't know how to handle that very well. But
yeah. No,
I guess continuing on with the adventure story here, from Wallace River, we came back, we hooked on to our kit, and we went straight to PPI. We hooked up some family there. I was supposed to try and sneak in and see Danny, our buddy here at Red Sand Adventures. If anybody hasn't checked out his YouTube channel yet, be sure to. Just uploaded a recent video there a couple of days ago. He's working on his Tacoma, building basically a camper style behind it. Pretty cool stuff. You want to check that out. Anyway, I didn't manage to go over to see Danny, but what we did see, see if I got this right here. We went out past where Anna Green Gables was, and something neat that I did, it's not super bushcraft, but it's kind of bushcraft. Have you ever been to a butterfly room?
If you mean it's a room full of butterflies, then absolutely.
That's exactly what it is. Sounds dorky. Not gonna lie, sounded like one of those things. All right, yeah, I'll go because the girls want to go. You know what? That was an amazing time. You get to get up close and personal with a lot of these butterflies and moths and stuff that you don't like. You may see them in passing, but you don't really get to see them up close, or the larvae stage, and then or the chrysalis stage, the cocoon stage, and stuff like that. Like, you can get in there and you can learn some really interesting things about these insects. And it was one of the highlights of my trip over there, which I. When Melissa mentioned it, I kind of brushed it off as just one of those filler activities, you know what I mean? But it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. We also, I guess it wasn't PPI, but we also got to go to a lavender fair. I didn't know that there was so much information about lavender. Once again, sounds a little dorky. I'm not going to lie. That was my first impression. But I was like, yeah, we've traveled past this place a couple times and stuff. And kind of an interesting place, man. They'll give you a lot of information that you didn't realize was kind of neat information, as long as you're willing to open your horizon to the experience.
Oh, for sure. I've always enjoyed that stuff. We go to Newfoundland fairly regularly, and not far from Gros Morne in Deer Lake area, there is the Insectarium. If you're ever in that area, it's worth dropping by to check it out. And when you go there, they have, I think it's two stories, and there's like a greenhouse off to the side. They have their own chrysalis where they grow, like they hatch the butterflies and then put them out. And they have all kinds of different insects and stuff. It is really neat to see. And you could spend days in there and not learn everything they have to tell you, right? So.
No, like I said, I openly admit, I didn't expect that to be as enjoyable as it was. So if anybody has ever wondered or had this opportunity offered to them, try it. It is pretty cool, honestly. It's neat. You get to learn a lot of interesting stuff. Just go in with an open mind.
And same thing, like you said, the lavender?
Yeah.
Any of these farms that allow you to come in and learn about it. We dropped by, I haven't been into a lavender one, although I've seen a few. There's a few around. But I've dropped in wineries and stuff where they talk about how they grow the plants and how different things are done and how what the processes are. And you can learn a lot about how plant identification, how to kind of have healthy things, what to look for. Yeah, you can see you.
And this is kind of my point on this. Just because it's about lavender, don't think that the information isn't relatable to other flora species. You know what I mean? As Mel says here, lavender farming, as it turns out, really interesting, and they make super specific and amazing products with lavender. And that's the other thing, like they make everything from like soaps and moisturizers and, you know, things like that to food and edibles and teas and stuff. Like, I didn't realize, once again, maybe it's just me being a little closed in, I didn't realize it was versatile with what they did with it, but you can only use certain parts of the plants for certain things at certain times of year. This is when you get into that interesting factor. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, oh, yeah, that's, if you eat the wrong thing at the wrong time, it could end up in the hospital, but at the right time, you're perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And it's just good information. Like I said, if anybody has an opportunity to check stuff out like that, don't let your ego get in the way, I guess is the main point of this whole thing. Open your mind to it, get out there. If nothing else, it'll entertain you for however long you're there. Better than sitting around watching people.
I was always told never be too good to be told something and never turn down a chance to learn something new, because you never know where you can use that new knowledge elsewhere better. So for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. What else do we do there, Mel, if you're still listening to us, that might be related to our vacation without leaking too much information about our personal life? Let's see. You never know how it will be applicable. You don't know what you don't know. Nomad, join us. Yeah, exactly. Just like Ben said. We did find one treasure from a small town gift shop. Oh, yes. So something that we bought our daughter, and we've talked about Lily in the past, Lily has autism. She really has this thing for hummingbirds. So something we found at one of these little towns that we were stopping in off the ATV trails was a hand-forged hummingbird. So this thing was hand-blown glass, all hand-forged, done the old way. And it was pretty cool, you know what I mean? And it's, what was the company name? It wasn't Forged in Fire. It might have been Forged by Fire or something like that. Anyway, they're a local artisan from Nova Scotia, and they make these things. And once again, going to these little tourist traps, as I would call them as we were going around, you can learn a lot of interesting things about the local area, because a lot of these places do host local artisans and stuff like that. Once again, going back to the lavender farm, there was a lady there that used clay, like literally, you know, molding clay. If you in bushcrafting clay pottery, you can go find a clay vein, make clay pottery, all that stuff. She used clay. And for her binder, she used something that was flexible, and I can't remember what it was for the life of me, but anyway, she made these entire life sculptures out of clay. And they were like flowers. They were very, very lifelike, highly detailed flower sculptures. And I thought they were real for a while, and then I'm like, oh no, they're plastic. And then it was, no, the buddy that owned the shop, no. The girl up the road made these. You know what I mean? Like, what? She made them. Once again, you need to learn about all this interesting stuff. So now I kind of want to try and find this woman and track her down, because now I want to learn about how she cures some of the clay, because that's something I can take back to bushcraft. Anytime I've tried to do clay and make clay stuff out in the woods, I've had a horrible problem with cracking. And I know a lot of people say, oh, you dried it too fast. I don't think it's the drying it too fast. I think it's more the binder I'm using, because you can't necessarily use straight clay sometimes. There's a certain name to it, but I can't remember what it's called. I say binder, I know it's not the right kind of word here, but anyway, as clay dries, it shrinks, and that's generally where you get your cracking. Well, this stuff goes in and it keeps the cracking from happening. And I know there's a mixture of, like, you got to put so much of this, that, and the other thing in it. And I'm really hoping I can find this woman and ask her some questions specifically about curing her clay, because I'm hoping I can take that back and potentially learn a little bit about what I'm trying to cure clay. You know what I mean? It's amazing how some things can link together that you never assume do. I went to a lavender farm expecting to learn nothing about plants, and now I'm trying to track down a woman about clay herding.
I'm watching, like, primitive technology and stuff. You ever see when he does it? He oftentimes takes an existing clay item, grinds it up, and throws it into his clay.
Yeah, and this is the process where I have a hard time with, you know what I mean? And I think it's one of those things, I can read it. I really want someone to show me some of this stuff, because I think it's something I'm doing wrong. For sure, I know it's something I'm doing wrong, obviously.
So I wonder if you ground up your cracked clay and put it back into the baked hardened clay and put it into your new clay, if it's like a starting seed, for lack of a better name.
And it could be. Like, I mean, the first time I tried to do clay, I know I immediately tried to dry it beside the fire, like quick dry. That does not work. You literally have to kind of let this, or at least for me, it didn't work. The best results I've had is where I let this stuff air dry in the shade. That way it doesn't dry too fast. If you can get the moisture out of it a little slower, it has a little bit more time to kind of adjust the moisture content through the thickness of it and get less cracking. Once it's dry enough, you can pick it up and you got to fire harden it, and that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I've never really made it past the not cracking stage with anything meaningful that wasn't just a blob to say anything. And that could be the other thing. I know there's like a thickness variable in this. There's a bunch of stuff. I really need to talk to somebody that works with clay and try and figure some of the stuff out by watching.
I know the other thing I read was that when you get the moisture right, you should be able to roll it up like a pencil and then wrap it around your finger without it cracking.
Maybe. I'm such a novice. And I want, this is one of those skills, much like fire making, I really want to learn how to do it somewhat good before I get too old to enjoy it.
But my question too would be, for this person you want to go find, are they using store-bought clay or are they using locally sourced clay?
And that's the other question I have. The fellow that I was talking to said he thought he was using locally, or she was using locally sourced clay. But the way it's laying, I have a suspicion it's probably store-bought clay.
Yeah.
Which is going to fire my whole thing out, but I still need to track the person down and ask that first question.
Yeah. There's a lot to it, for sure. What are we sitting at? 5:41. Okay.
And for those of us over in Atlantic Daylight Time, it's 9:41 then.
Oh, yeah. We're 41 minutes in is what I was kind of getting at.
Yeah. And this is only supposed to be a somewhat quickish episode to say, hey, we're back. We're not dead. We didn't drop off the face of the planet. So
I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to add. A couple other subjects I want to bring up. I just don't know if it'll bring us too long.
Well, I'll shut up. You get in.
Interesting. I didn't really get to too many places that are jumping to my mind to talk about, like, worth visiting. I mean, obviously, Kedges is always great. I was spend a lot of time contemplating the gear I took, because when we went, we sort of, as a last minute decision, I took some stuff for my daughter. I didn't take enough stuff. And so Chris was coming with us. He was going to bring some stuff. And I really started thinking about how to make best use of your gear. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we ended up like using a backpack that wasn't necessarily ideal for bushcrafting, but yeah, it worked. Mm-hmm. Through the gear, you know, we had some stuff. We went to a thrift store, quickly picked up. I picked up a really neat little folding chair that isn't as big as a book when it's folded up. And then when you open it up, it's the tension of the chair that holds it all together. So it's kind of a weird thing.
So Nomad, just a quick question here. Is there any other gear that either of us got to test out? Like I said, I myself, I didn't have any new gear for my adventures. Ben got the Olight. Was there anything else you had there, Ben?
Let's see. The Olight, the backpack. I did use my solar charger, the one like you have, the Burns Electric.
Yep.
And you know, I have mixed feelings on that particular piece of device. I know you've generally liked it on, like, when you're,
it's good when you got bright sun.
Yeah.
If you don't have bright sun, it's not great.
So that's kind of the thought I had, and because it has no storage capability, you do need a charger. And so we picked up like this recently. This is a neat one because the solar panel,
oh, it actually detaches.
It's quite big. It has a built-in flashlight, so it has a couple of capabilities that
I like it.
That's so upsetting. So we picked up that we got that. We ordered that. It wasn't supposed to show up till like Sunday. It showed up on a Wednesday, so it was sitting outside of my door for longer than I wanted. But I got thinking about the other gear with that thing, because I'm trying to make, you know, that one power supply last for everything else I got. So I got like the Garmin InReach, which I'm really liking because it lasts close to a week, I think, especially if you play with it a bit, like turn it down when you're not using it. But I did play with that a lot, and I was able to send messages from anywhere in Kedji, letting people know where I was, how things were going. And I realized that, because Chris had the InReach GPS unit. But I realized I'm using my cell phone anyway, so that lightweight, small item has a neat advantage, because you get the full GPS basically on your phone anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Which you have to keep. But yeah, you need something to charge it. You have a drone. You can use your drone batteries to charge your other devices.
And I was doing that on our trip. I had to charge my phone up for an emergency little bit there to use the mapping software. And I just connected it to the drone batteries.
Yeah. So things like that, you know, just having that gear and thinking about the gear you have and how long it lasts. Like the Olight, yeah. One of the big things is, I don't want to carry extra batteries, and I don't want to worry about it not having enough charge to make it through a weekend's trip. And if you have to charge it, if you're using your charging, your USB powered, you know, battery or solar panel, then it's taking power from something else that you might need.
And with that solar panel, that was one thing I did find. I do enjoy it, don't get me wrong. I did find you had to attach it to a battery bank, and then use the battery bank to try and charge your item. Trying to charge something directly, unless it was incredibly bright sun shining directly on it, never really seemed to work. The only time I really got it to work good was that time you and I were out, and I laid it out on the motorcycle to charge my phone. Yeah. It was the only time I actually charged my phone directly. Every time else, I just kind of lay it out, hook it up to one of my bigger battery banks, come back to it at the end of the night, and like, oh, okay, my battery bank's charged now, and then I use that to charge my stuff.
Okay. I had decent luck, but again, like you said, you need direct light. And so that was the thing, is like with the canoe, I did find I could stick it across the bags and you're paddling along and it would charge up. And there's a pocket in it, I can just throw my phone in it. It just happened to have it close by. I haven't put a lot of stuff away recently.
Oh, my house looks like a tornado went off, man. And then
it has a large section, and it says 21 watts, so that should be a fair amount of power. It should give you some capabilities. Here's something that I haven't tested yet, but I'm looking forward to testing it. With that unit I bought, the battery with the solar panel attached to it, mm-hmm. I got this little dongle, and it'll tell me the charge power coming into it and how many amps are going out. So what the voltage that the panel has. So I'm actually planning on hooking it to the Burns Electric and seeing what I'm getting.
Now that I find interesting. Let me know how that finds out or how that turns out. Follow-up question from Nomad. Was there any gear that you realized you needed that you didn't have?
You've been with me, right? I tend to take gear that I definitely don't need, but I've rarely been without gear that I needed. No, but we did have a failure that we were able to successfully. So packing our gear, and I hope Chris will forgive me for this, but I think he will. Chris had one of these Amac hammocks, a very beautiful, nice hammock. It has a very specialty strap that you use to hook it to the tree and hook to the hammock. Well, when we were packing our gear through the rigs and reels, one of the straps fell out of his pack and ended up in the couch. So we show up on the site on first day one and we start hooking it up, and it's like, damn, I'm missing a strap. So fortunately for me, I had my One Tigress camp, my hammock. And this isn't a plug for One Tigress. This has very little to do with One Tigress. they sell the hammock with the ladder straps,
Yep.
which I'm not a huge fan of. I'm going to be honest with you. But the first thing I did was hook whoopee slings to it. So what I was able to do in this particular instance was take one of my whoopee slings off of mine, hook it up so I'd use the ladder sling, and give him a whoopee sling. And we hooked the whoopee sling to the hammock, and we were able to save the weekend. So, and then for a tree strap, we actually just cut a length off my canoe painter's line, which is way thicker than it needs to be, and that was perfectly good for a tree strap. And we were able to camp 2 nights at 2 different sites with no problems using this setup. So it's good to know, like, if you have the gear, you can, and a bit of ingenuity, you can really make things work. Needed a couple extra pegs.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. But we did try paracord, and honestly, that did not excite me. Paracord.
Well, paracord stretches. That's the problem with it. It may be good in the here and now, and I've experienced this. You set up your hammock, and in the morning, you're almost on the ground because it's stretched that much. Like, it'll stretch a long way.
Yeah, it definitely has its limitations. Paracord has a lot of advantages in some spots, but if you were to ask me what my favorite rope is, I'm going to tell you right now it's Amsteel.
Yeah, Amsteel or that, I can't remember what it's called, WWUSG, whatever stuff it is. Same kind of idea, though.
That style, that Dyneema style, hollow core braided line that does not stretch, does not twist, can hold its, can hold the same weight per diameter as a steel cable. And yeah, you can't pull strands out of it and make snares, and nobody hides, snare wire and fire line and stuff inside of it, but man, it is strong, purpose built.
Pound for pound, it's incredibly strong. You pay a little bit more for it, but once again, money well spent.
For sure, 100%. Yeah.
I mean, my whoopee slings, I think I told you this when I bought them. And if anybody's interested, we did a video back somewhere buried in our video files. Just go back and look for it, hammock setup maybe. And Ben actually goes through how you can take off anybody that has like the rope with the carabiner set up on their hammock, how to switch that out for a set of whoopee slings. So if anybody's interested in that, I highly recommend you go back and check out that video and I'll show you how to do that. But those whoopee slings, I think I told you at the time I used it to tow my truck, just one sling, because they said they were like ridiculously strong. And granted, it was on flat ground, I wasn't pulling it out of the ditch or something like that. But I was still amazed at the amount of weight they would take for the diameter of a rope, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I think it's like 2,000 pounds for a 1/8 line.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was like 2,000 pounds, but there's no way. But I can tell you now, it had no problem pulling the truck where a piece of 550 paracord
Snap.
snapped before the truck even like twitched.
Yeah, no, I've done stuff with that line, and I take it out, and people look at me and say, "That's not gonna hold anyone," and I'm like,
You'd be surprised what that'll hold.
there's a lot of stuff going to fail before that line fails. That is not the weak point in this setup.
I trust my whoopee slings more than I trust my hammock. I expect the hammock to fail before the whoopee slings.
100%. I expect the hammock to fail. I expect the trees to fall down. I expect almost everything else to happen before that fails. So yeah, actually, I had a utility constrictor line, I think they call it. On this particular hammock, it was just a setup I had. I was testing out, and it slips. And it's. I never had good luck with that system. I found that by the time it cinches so hard I can't get it to slide freely anymore. Or if I don't, I've never had any good luck with it. But with the whoopee sling, I've never had a problem. Like, it seems to put the pressure where it needs to be. I have had no failures with whoopee slings. And I happened to be in a a sailing store. We happened to be in Lunenburg before we went camping, and I, you know, it was just in the back of my mind. I just want a whoopee sling. I want to fix it. So I dropped in. I bought like 28 foot of line, 69 cents a foot, and I just cut a whole bunch for myself. And I think it took me like less than 10 minutes. I took he had a piece of lock wire there. I bought that from him. I think I paid $1 something for that. Bent it in half and poof, poof, boom. I made my whoopee slings in a couple of minutes.
Now that I have whoopee slings, I 100% believe they are the way to go if you have a hammock.
Yeah.
It's just the adjustability is so quick on. You know what I mean? That was the big draw point to me. Everything aside, the strength, the simplicity, all that aside, the ability to be able to quickly and effectively fine-tune your hammock. That's what sold me.
Yeah. You can change the length by a millimeter, and you don't tie a single knot, and when you make the adjustment, you're done. Like, there's no, it's not going to slip. Like, you are easily able to pull that line any length you want, but when you put your weight in that hammock, it is not moving.
Yeah, it's just a great thing. Anybody interested in that, once again, check out the video or just go get a set. You are not going to be disappointed, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know. If you've tried whoopee slings and it's not your thing, then I seriously wonder what went wrong, because
I was going to say, if somebody out there has tried whoopee slings and you do not like them, no judgment, let us know why. Honestly, maybe there's something we are not seeing. But let us know why. Genuinely, we will not judge. Just curious to see why somebody would not like him. Above and beyond, like the, well, most hammocks, they come with, like you said, ladder straps, or worse yet, the rope. You know what I mean? It's just rope.
Yeah. No, I know. I've never had a problem with my whoopee slings, and I've got whoopee slings on at least 5, if not 6 hammocks. And once I started making them, I made them myself. Like, I make all my own. I do probably a longer berry than most people. I do a few things that I like, but man, I have had no problems. And I've, you know, you've seen me use them.
Yeah, no, like I said, you've had great luck with yours. I've had great luck with mine. I can't think of any reason why not to like them. That's why I'm genuinely interested why somebody would want it. And maybe there's a completely valid reason. I just haven't discovered yet.
Yeah. We made kids ones, and we bought Lashit. Lashit's the same material, but it's much thinner. It's like, I don't know, 1/16. It's not big, much bigger than fishing line. Like, it's shockingly thin. And I have a roll of it I've been taking for years.
I think that's what I have. It's Lashit that they sold as maybe advanced kite string or something.
Yeah. It's very thin, very... Well, I made a set of whoopee slings with that, and I attached them to some old curtains for my daughters to sleep in. And, I mean, I bet you that would hold your weight. Like, it seems ridiculous.
Oh, 100%. The stuff I have says it's rated for 1,000 pounds.
Yeah. And you're looking at it like, no. No.
No, and that's the way I felt about it. But I actually got a piece of it, tied it to a rafter, tied it to a handle, so I'm not going to hold on to that with my hands and keep my fingers. And I could literally, like, hold my weight off it, just off one strand. I mean, I was a little nervous. But I think it's still just the visual of it's like, it's literally thinner than, it's like bank line. That's how thick it is. Maybe a tiny bit thicker than bank line, but not by much.
And you try doing that with bank line, tell me what's going to happen.
Oh, I'm going to take out an eye for sure.
Snap it. You're going to, well, first off, it's going to stretch a foot.
Yeah.
And then it's going to snap, like, right
and
away.
And the thing is, this lash doesn't stretch. It's just like the steel. It does not stretch.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I made a full set of whoopee slings out of it, full 2-3 sets for each of my daughters. I made a set. It was great fun, great, great material. I've used it for guy lines on my tarps and stuff. I mean, your tarp is, you're going to lose your tarp line before you lose your guidelines with that.
Oh, yeah, tarp will tear itself apart. The guidelines is still the line.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's not the weak point in the system. So yeah, no, those are some of the things. I mean, I think we covered a lot of stuff, you know, like, be open to new ideas, be open to new experiences for sure. Think about the gear you're taking, and do you need the biggest and best of everything? And the thing is, probably not, but like, think about the stuff you have, and is it doing everything you need it to do? I've been looking at a lot of gear and stuff over the last little while, and really thinking about like, what will it do for me, and do I need it, and does it give me advantages? And that's what I'm looking for now, is advantages. I got to use my Agua Cannon, the 15-inch saw.
Did you?
Yeah. So I have two 15s now, because why not?
One thing better than one is two.
Right? Because I have a 21. Now I have two 15s. Actually, I just happened to be an REI down in the States, and they were selling it on clearance, and I'm like, my God. Throw that in my bag. I'll leave with that. Don't worry about it. Like, I know it's a problem for you. But man, it fits in the pack a lot nicer. It's small, it's compact, it's very versatile.
How'd you find the cutting area on it? Did it cut? Like, I mean, you're still going to be good probably up to, like, what, 6-inch log or something?
You still do a 6-inch log. I mean, your stroke's not going to be long. That's the only problem.
No, I mean, you can still get through it. You're not going to hit the bow in it.
No, I think your risers are the same risers as on the 21.
Okay, so you still have lots of room. So, like, in worst case, you'd have to rotate the log a little bit, but you're still going to get a great cut out of it.
So, yeah, you can cut, other than the stroke being shorter, I think you can cut just as deep. Like, your handle's the same height, and your end piece is the same height. It's just, overall, it's shorter.
Hmm.
So they only really shorten two things, the blade and your top bar.
Okay, no, so, that'd actually be a good setup then. Because that was the only thing I thought about with your 21. The 21, great saw. It's just a little big to put the back.
It is. It's like 2 inches too long.
So what you need is a 19. They don't make a 19, folks. Don't go looking for it, by the way.
You know, I don't 2 inches make a 19. Too long. Story of my life, you know?
And on that note, I think I'm done for the night.
Demonetized.
Yeah, next week we'll be back. We will have a proper topic. Like we said, tonight was just kind of a catch-up, getting us back into the groove, getting some of the kinks worked out. I know it's only 2 weeks, folks, but you'd be surprised what you forget in 2 weeks about how to run all this nonsense.
Yeah, it's working. It obviously, we figured it out. Anyways, yeah, get out there, have fun, enjoy yourselves. I'm hoping to get out again soon. I got some ideas. I nearly booked a site this morning for the weekend. But yeah, I definitely want to get out and do something. Hopefully you guys all manage to get out and do something.
Hoping to get out this weekend with the young one. She's dead set on getting out to do some camping. So that's the plan.
And I heard that you were booking a flight to come out and visit me. So like,
at some point, I'm going to start looking for cheap flights now.
Man, a week ago, I found one in September for $300 return.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Huh. Round trip, $300. Man, maybe we'll. Maybe I will see if I can find, or no, they're probably in bed now. I was gonna say, if a set of grandparents will potentially take Lily for a night or two, maybe it's something that I can both disappear to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you guys both come out, we still have to take our kids. So,
I don't know how Willie will handle a plane. That's a whole adventure on its own. We're still working on that.
Just tell her it's a big bus.
It's a big bus, and she handles the bus so well. Actually, she's pretty good on the bus. It's an Airbus.
It's an Airbus.
Just don't look outside. Anyway. Get out there, play safe, get dirty, all that stuff, folks. We'll join you, or we will be back here again next week. We'll have a proper episode and all that good stuff. It's good to be back at the chairs, though. It's good to be back at it. I forgot how fun this can be.
Just, same Bushcraft channel, same Bushcraft time.
Hopefully same Bushcraft people.
We should do that sometime. Just have two substitutes. See if anyone notices. Night off.
One of these days, it's just going to be a picture on a sack in my place with a headset on it. Nobody will.